For her, it was. Its finality unanticipated when cancer granted her the shortest of leases. There is still a lingering, languid perfume from the creamy white flowers, even though the fierce flush of its earlier blossom has slowly faded with no trace of Lowell's murderous 5 days white igniting the coming evening. And when I touch the blossom, it feels fleshy, ready to break in my hands, the soft pulp seared with a delicate blush of pink. I take the petals, go back inside, and set them in front of her photograph, then return to my desk. Hannah, my housekeeper, comes to the doorway to tell me she's going and that she's left me something light for my supper in the kitchen. I have a growing dread of these moments. As always, she asks, will that be all? And as always, I answer yes and thank her, but have no way to tell her that after she goes, the house will fall again into silence, and increasingly a part of me wants her to never leave. I listen to the front door close, hear the familiar complaint of her car's elderly engine as it starts up, and try to focus again on the words. But I'm distracted once more by the padded envelope on my desk that contains a DVD and the briefest of notes from someone I knew over 40 years ago. Someone with whom I shared a part of my life in a far-off world that was short in duration, but whose memories continue to accompany the counting down of my years. And there's something in me that doesn't want to view it, because I don't always trust the past, and sometimes, if you stumble into it unaware, it can pull you in like quicksand, drag you down until you go under. And I know I have to hold my head up. So, for the moment at least, I set the envelope to one side and try to find my own path back, exercise some control over what is rising to meet me. But perhaps I'm only avoiding committing to the details because it goes against the grain, against all the values of discretion that years of service inculcated. Discretion, secrecy, silence. These are still the trade's accepted virtues, even in an age of supposed freedom of information, where the idealists believe that it never requires a price to be paid. Those we bring through rendition to sit in cells with their interrogators in places that don't exist, and those we subject to enhanced techniques, know a different truth. That knowledge is often the most dangerous thing of all to possess, and that in this world, the safest lives are those who know nothing. But only if you are believed. Yes, only if you are believed. How to tell the story and be granted this belief, even if never as completely as I would wish? So much distance has been traveled from those far-off days, and there are other things fixed firmly inside the codes of confidentiality I once worked by, and perhaps above all, the redactions we all make on the pages of our past. And yes, when you alone carry the information, it is, of course, a pressing and constant temptation to omit or even reshape the moments when we were less than we wanted to be, or make ourselves the victim rather than the perpetrator of our own lives. I've realized that already. Perhaps to counter that, I have a little postcard of one of Rembrandt's self-portraits above my desk. I glance at it often. Think how tempting it must have been to leave the world a noble image, one infused with an enduring grandeur. But this is not what I see. Instead, he gives us the face of an old man saddened and wearied by the incomprehensible flurries of life that have carried him here. His clothes are black. His eyes look away from the darkness that occupies one side of the canvas. But it's as if it's slowly moving towards his face and already seeping into his skin. A silent dignity survives the centuries. Perhaps such a final dignity will always be out of my reach, because I think the only way to attain it is by telling all of the truth. And I'm not sure if I can do that. Or even if all of the truth is something that can ever fully exist anymore in this world,